Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to another episode of the Daily Frame Wrap. I'm your host, Nicholas Lorimer, today joined once again this week by Dr. Don Endres. So our first story for today, I mean, we're going to combine a bunch of stories together, I think. And we can broadly, I think, describe this as South Africa and the good vibes. Africa experiencing a bit of an uptick in perceptions. So the first of these stories is that Magda Wierzycka, sorry, Polish names in particular are difficult for me, one of South Africa's richest women, if not the richest woman, I think, and co-founder and CEO of Cigna Investment Management Company, has said that she has returned to South Africa after spending some time in the UK, where she was living for a while. Now, she had warned a while ago in an interview that she would probably be doing this, as she didn't like some of the new tax increases that Britain would be implementing. She described the UK as becoming uninvestable and a scary environment for anyone looking to deploy capital. She complained about problems with the welfare dependents in the country, saying if you've got anxiety disorder, you can get social benefits. She said it's an economy that's been completely destroyed, and she reckons that in the next couple of years, the Labour government will only manage things even worse than it's been managed up till now. And I know that the Labour government is about to bring in some big new tax increases. So not a great time to be in the UK. The Jonathan Oppenheimer of the famous Oppenheimer family, who built Anglo-American and De Beers, said that as long as the UK takes 30 years to do a 9-month project, it's uninvestable. At the same time, the Reserve Bank Governor Lesego Nyako has said that South Africa is turning around. He says, even with all these uncertainties, I think South Africa has come out much better than we thought it would at the beginning of the year, and sentiment about South Africa has changed. He said, you don't change sentiment by spinning your way out of problems. You change sentiment by demonstrating you're taking concrete steps to deal with your problems. During the, he goes on to boast about how South Africa decided that it was going to aggressively lower inflation when they thought they had an opportunity to do so as a central bank. And he says now also because the country's budget seems to be coming more in order, this is also positively adding to the inflation problems, and we're managing to reduce inflation in a nice way. The last story kind of on this theme is Durban Harbour, which is looking to try and get itself off of the worst port in the world list. In a ranking of ports, it was ranked at the bottom by the World Bank in 2024. And recently as last year, the turnaround time for permits from the port was 10 to 12 days. Due to some reforms there, they've managed to reduce that to 48 hours. There's also a new management company from the Philippines coming to take over the port in early 2026 after winning a court battle. So, John, once again, I think we've asked this question before, but the business community seems to be increasingly under the impression that South Africa might be turning the corner and going in the right direction. What do you make of this? I mean, it looks certainly like we're benefiting from the mistakes being made by countries like the UK. What's your take on this?
Yeah, so I think we're experiencing a really fascinating moment in South Africa's history right now, where within a very short period of time, like over the past 3 weeks maybe, we can sense the shifting of the political winds and of the sentiments in South Africa. And, you know, at the beginning of such a change, you're always going to wonder whether it's sustainable or not. So is this going to last, or is this just, you know, a few good news stories and that's all it is? It's a blip. But I think it might be more than a blip. I think this could be sustainable. And one of the reasons for that is that we are benefiting from a kind of seesaw, where it's not just South Africa going up a little bit, it's also some other important countries in the world going down a bit. So as Magda Wierzycka was saying about the UK, you know, there's lots to be criticized in that government's handling of its economy, of its society. Freedom of speech, we believe, is under greater pressure there than it is in South Africa. Regulations are completely out of control. And the growth prospects for such an economy are not the same as they are for an emerging market that is getting its act together. So it may well be that South Africa, by contrast to some of these developed economies like the UK, in some ways also the US, is actually beginning to look like a really hot prospect. And in the case of the US, the thing to look out for is the Federal Reserve and its policies on managing the currency, where the expectation is that interest rates will be lowered, higher inflation will be accepted as both being acceptable to get the economy to grow faster, but also to inflate away the very high debt levels. And at the same time as the United States seems to be moving towards looser monetary policy, South Africa is maintaining its rather conservative course. So our inflation target has been shifted down to 3%. Our bond yields are down. It looks like our government debt to GDP is peaking and will start coming down. We are posting primary surpluses. So by contrast to the US, to the UK, we're actually looking quite interesting at the moment. So what a fascinating moment in South Africa's history to be living through, to be observing, and to be a part of as well, Nick.
So the bottom line, though, is what does this actually mean for South African people, right? At the end of the day, investors are able to make a bit more money on a project here, or maybe our bonds are particularly, looking attractive right now, whatever it is. And all of a sudden, we get some money flowing in. What does this actually mean for ordinary South Africans? I mean, the major structural blocks, I think, on our economy still remain. We've got the fact that government procurement is hijacked by its the procurement system to be extremely inefficient. We've got the fact that we've got something like BEE, which distorts investment opportunities and makes them far less attractive. We've got the micromanagement of the economy by groups like the Competition Commission, who just sort of regulate everything and turn everything into a massive court battle. So, how much upside are we going to see here? We're not headed towards 6% growth, are we? I mean, maybe even 3% growth looks a bit ambitious, even with the things looking up a bit.
Yeah, I think that's the right way to think about it, is to think about little upside or big upside. And it looks at the moment like both of them are available to us. We can choose which one we get, which one we have. It's likely that complacency in our political circles and big business circles will lead us to get the small upside. So that's benefiting from higher commodities demand, benefiting from sound fiscal and monetary management compared to other economies. It's getting a bit of growth back into the economy at maybe the 1.5, 2% levels or so, which is okay, but it's not going to change the lives of most ordinary South Africans who need much bigger changes to happen to see their lives improve.
It'll ease the pressure on South Africans. Maybe we won't get poorer every single year as we have for, what, 15 years now or something. But if we want to actually transform the society to a fundamentally different one, this is going in the right direction, but we need that big upside if we actually want to do that.
Exactly. And you mentioned the word pressure, and the risk here is that the pressure gets taken off from the need for reforms and for higher growth. And that is certainly where the IRR is going to be positioning itself, is to point out that 1 or 2% growth is great, but certainly not enough to achieve the results that South Africans want to see being achieved. And for that, we do need much higher growth rates, much along the lines of what you've said. So that's your 5%, 6%, 7% growth. And to get to those sorts of levels, we are going to need some very substantial policy reforms, the kind that we've been writing about in our Blueprint for Growth papers. It's the deregulation, it's taking the race-based laws out of the economy, out of society, strengthening property rights, and making South Africa a very appealing place for international investors. And on that little note, Nick, I'm just back from the United States and spoke to some people there on the Hill and in the administration. As we will be covering later on in this show, tensions remain high, and they are also perceived to be seen high from the US side. But at the same time, the US does agree with a vision of outrageous success for South Africa. So that is something they would welcome. They would say, this is fantastic. We would love to see South Africa growing at 5 to 6 to 7%. I put it to them that what I'd like to see happen for South Africa is an investment frenzy. I would like to see investors going crazy for the opportunity to put their money into South Africa. And that is achievable if we set the right incentives and the right framework conditions. So that is the vision that we should be aspiring to, is an investment frenzy for South Africa, a big upside, a shooting the lights out. And if we were to aim for that, we would have the support of our American friends. Nick.
All right, let's move on to our next story. And this is about how things are going in the city of Joburg. Not great, as they say. One of these stories, I think, reveals once again that, unfortunately, one of the most innovative groups in South Africa continues to be the illegal mining sector, which is always, you know, making you sort of bending your mind with how they are able to get away with kind of incredible things. In a recent raid by City Power and the police, their teams have discovered illegally collected cables, unauthorized charging stations, and active mining equipment, all drawing power from the municipal network without payment in Moorendal in Johannesburg. The operation where they had found all these, and there's a picture on the, I think, the News 24 article about this, of basically all of these huge nest of cables going down into a mining shaft. The operation also resulted in the confiscation of, I think it's 120 tons of aluminium cable worth 180,000 rand. And at the same time, they also came across a school that had a fraudulent meter installation and was fined 28,000 rand for the infrastructure tampering. So obviously, you know, good work that the city sort of caught this. I don't think it's the end of illegal mining, unfortunately, because there are so many of them now in Johannesburg. At the same time, a Johannesburg ward councillor, Lucinda Harmon, who was actually my former councillor in when I lived in Joburg before I moved, who I thought was a very hardworking and dedicated councillor, has resigned, citing a toxic political environment, intimidation from construction mafias, and a complete lack of support from the Speaker's office, things that she say put her life at risk. She's quoted as saying, "It became untenable. I was literally at risk and my health is at risk. If somebody didn't get to me, then the job was going to kill me because of the amount of stress and pressure I was under." She said she had reported harassment and threats from within her own ward committee, including members aligned to political groupings she said were determined to undermine her work and disrupt projects in the area. And yeah, as a former ward councillor, I can say that sounds very familiar. I never experienced anything that bad, but you know, it was it's certainly an accurate description of how it feels to be a ward councillor. And the last story kind of attached to all of this is that Helen Ziller has said that if a space becomes available in the Johannesburg City Council's DA caucus as a proportional representative councillor, she would very happily take up the position if she was able to, which is interesting because that shows that she's kind of really throwing herself all in to this campaign for Joburg as well, to become part of this, of the council, even before she has a chance to be elected in the next local government elections. So, John, a lot of stuff there, but clearly Joburg is continuing to feel almost a bit like a sort of pressure cooker. There's just so many things going wrong now at this point. There's, of course, all the infrastructure problems, the biggest being, I think, probably the water and power outages. It goes without saying that these city power illegal connections were causing absolute havoc with the local electricity infrastructure because, you know, these guys were basically running a mine off of just plugged straight into the municipal infrastructure. What's your take on all this?
I think regular viewers of the Daily Friend show will probably have become accustomed to us presenting all downers. You know, everything was bad and has been bad for a very long time. And we're probably now transitioning into a phase of uppers and downers. So our first story was an upper, you know, things looking up a bit. The second one is a downer, and that's probably going to continue for a while. But I think what it does illustrate is some of the barriers that still stand in the way of that very big upside that we see for South Africa. We've mentioned some of the policy barriers, but another category is law enforcement. So both of those relate in a way to property rights. If you cannot be sure of your property, then you're not going to invest in a place. And that is what these stories reveal about Johannesburg specifically. Right, you've got illegal connections. You've got the mini substations, I think, also being tampered with and vandalized. You've got aluminium cable being stolen. You've got underground tunnels being used to access infrastructure.
Just a note on the aluminium cable. One of the reasons that there's so much aluminium cable is because I think I'm remembering this correctly. The city of Joburg, because it was experiencing so much copper cable theft, tried to switch to aluminium cables in a lot of places, to, because it's got a lower street value and it was thought that it would be less valuable. That didn't work.
We need plastic cables probably or something like that. From recycled plastic, then the cables should be safe. But yeah, I mean, like the criminal energy is very impressive. And yeah, this is clearly something that has to be addressed if Johannesburg is to be turned around. Especially the ward councillors are under huge pressure and have been for a very long time. No, that's not new. I think Councillor Harman's resignation illustrates that. And there, an interesting question would be, what difference can leadership make? And we've seen in some other government departments that good leadership can make a huge difference. So who knows? If Helen Zille were to come in, take the city administration, the caucus, the council by the scruffs of their necks, give them a good shake to, get the place working again. I think a lot could be achieved, but it's tough because there are so many vested interests now from those cable thieves, the electricity thieves, the illegally connected schools,
Construction
construction
mafia.
mafias. Yeah, exactly. So it's going to be very tough. But it's possible, and I think it can be done.
Yeah, I think it'll also be interesting to see Helen in a legislative environment again. The last time she was what attending a legislature often was what when she was Premier of the Western Cape, and then she was representing the executive. So it's going to be interesting seeing her as an opposition councillor, if indeed she does end up in the Joburg Council before the election. And that also, I think, will mean that if she does win the mayorship, it'll be good. I think it's the best way to go from into government is often from those opposition benches because you're already sort of up to speed with a lot of things. So yeah, we'll see how that goes. It could make Joburg city politics even more sort of interesting and chaotic than it already is. There's a big name in Joburg. Okay, I think last story for today. I don't know. We'll see how we're going for time. So I complained about the G20, the fact that we were sort of making this public effort to not hand over the G20 to the Americans. I thought that even though it was described as a win for Ramaphosa to get this leader statement put out by the G20, I thought, well, this doesn't really gain us anything. No one will remember this in 2 weeks, and we're just going to bring more trouble down on our heads when we're not in a position to deal with it. And the US has done sort of that. They haven't done the worst sanction in the world. They've said that this is a post by Donald Trump. The United States did not attend the G20 in South Africa because the South African government refused to acknowledge or address the horrific human rights abuses endured by Afrikaners and other descendants of Dutch, French, German settlers. To put it more bluntly, they are killing white people and randomly allowing their farms to be taken from them. Perhaps worst of all, the soon to be out of business New York Times and fake news media won't issue a word against this genocide. That's why all the liars and pretenders of the radical left media are going out of business. At the conclusion of the G20, South Africa refused to hand off the G20 presidency to senior representative from our US embassy who attended the closing ceremony. Therefore, at my direction, South Africa will not be receiving an invitation to the 2026 G20, which will be hosted in the great city of Miami, Florida next year. South Africa has demonstrated to the world they are not a country worthy of membership anywhere, and we are going to stop all payments and subsidies to them effective immediately. Thank you for your attention to this matter, which always amuses me because it sounds like the end of an angry email. So apart from all the silly genocide stuff and that, I mean, I am not sure what subsidies or payments the US was still providing to us, because I think most of those were stopped towards the beginning of the year when I think like things like PEPFAR were cut. So I'm not sure if there's additional stuff. That doesn't seem as bad as it could have been. We didn't have our tariffs shot up by another 50%. President Ramaphosa responded, and I'm not going to read the whole thing because it's a much longer thing. Presidency really needs to, you know, make this a bit more Twitter friendly. President Cyril Ramaphosa has noted the regrettable statements by President Donald Trump on South Africa's participation in the G20 meeting. Says the US was not present. As one of the founding members of the G20, South Africa has always valued the spirit of consensus, collaboration, and partnership that defines the G20. In keeping with this approach, the United States was expected to participate in all meetings of the G20 during South Africa's presidency, but unfortunately it elected not to attend the G20 Leaders Summit in Johannesburg out of its own volition. We are, however, pleased that U.S. entities such as businesses and civil society organizations participated in large numbers in G20-related activities such as the B20 and G20 Social. South Africa values their participation. South Africa is a member of the G20 in its own name and right. The G20 membership is at the behest of all other members. South Africa is a sovereign constitutional democratic republic and does not appreciate insults from another country about its membership and worth in participating in global platforms. South Africa respects the sovereignty of all countries and would never demean or insult another country or its standing and worthiness in the community of nations. South Africa will continue to participate as a full, active, and constructive member of the G20. We call on members of the G20 to reaffirm its continued operation in the spirit of multilateralism based on consensus, with all members participating on an equal footing in all of its structures. So it looks kind of there like the government is sort of giving up on trying to make nice to the Americans anymore. John, what do you make of all this?
In our discussion before the show, I think you said that you'd been doing quite a lot on the G20, and it does feel a bit like a soap opera, you know. So this is the Cyril and Donald show, episode 421, the next iteration, and I think what we can read from it is that they are no closer to finding one another than they have been for, you know, the entire rest of the year since Donald Trump became president. One of the things that is very noticeable is the difference in tone and language in these two statements, where we can see that the South African side is very much process focused, very much respectability focused, very much respecting the forms focused, whereas the United States or the Trump administration does not care a fig about the form and the respectability and the lofty language. You know, they're pushed directly to get to their point. And we also see the South Africans, I think, still trying to explain to the Americans why they are wrong. And it's like, there's no point in doing it, I think. You know, you're not going to convince President Trump on the basis of long arguments that he's wrong about the stuff. The reason he's saying the things he says is to achieve an effect, I think, not to get closer to the truth. It's not a truth-seeking message, mission that he's on. He's on a mission of determining the power balance and defining the power balance. And the power balance between South Africa and the United States is very much weighted towards the United States. And therefore, you know, he can say what he likes. There's not much that South Africa can do. And I think if he, you know, says you're not coming to the G20 meeting next year, what is South Africa going to do? They're trying to gate crash, or I don't know. So I think it's all pretty unproductive. A bit amusing as well, if you sort of can separate yourself from the very real impacts of this entire show. But yeah, I'm not seeing progress being made at this stage.
I have such sort of a low opinion of some of these forums like the G20 that I'm not particularly disturbed that we might not be at the next one, I must say. You know, I suspect what will probably happen is we will try to go and then we'll just not get our visas to the US, something like that. We'll probably have to wait and it happens. And I'm sure there'll be an attempt to rally other countries to complain about it, which, yeah, I don't think anyone is going to be willing to really stick out their necks for us. Maybe. I don't know. Who knows? But
well,
I'm pretty
sure. Maybe we'll see an alternative G20. So it'll be like the G20 of the South. and there'll be
oh, that's so lame, though.
Yes, but it's kind of the thing that happens, I think.
Yeah, it's like the AU, which will issue a statement condemning some coup attempt, and then 3 months later accept the people carried out the coup as like a fully legitimate government and the true representative of their nation, regardless of if there's been any sort of election and stuff. I don't know. Those Southern Hemisphere or Global South forums are always just so lame and hypocritical and just useless. So if we're going to do that, it's, you know.
And look at the statement or the declaration that came out of the G20 summit. You know, the sort of the pride and joy of the South African government. But who cares? I mean, it's
Yeah.
full of lofty ideals, you know, that are ignored as much as they are acknowledged. But it doesn't seem to lead to very much, really. I suppose, you know, one
Yes.
benefit of the G20 meeting might have been meetings on the sidelines. I know that the Indians, the
Right,
Brazilians, and the South Africans met, and that's probably useful. But the summit
I think
itself,
that's
I don't know.
really what it is. You know, like most industries have like a trade fair where, you know, they will invite different people and they'll all meet together and, you know, there's some meaningless prize awarded or something, but then everyone gets to chat in the same field. And that's kind of what a lot of these forums, the G20, the WEF, all these things are actually for, is basically for people wasting money in expensive hotels and getting a chance to meet other world leaders and other business leaders and bureaucrats and stuff. So you can definitely get stuff, but I don't know. It's just it's there's a lot of hot air about not very much, I don't think, in this case.
Yeah. And also think that the Americans are right to be upset about the bloat. You know, so just the amount of sideshows that accompany the G20, you know, with religious leaders meeting and think tanks meeting and labor organizations meeting and these people meeting and those people meeting,
Yeah.
it seems excessive.
Indeed. You know, and how much like genuinely good things actually come out of it. I know people will talk about this initiative or that initiative, but actually how much sort of real on the ground change or programs are ever really launched out of these that couldn't be launched by a bilateral meeting between like some of the bigger players anyway. Okay. I think let's call it there. There's another story that I don't think we're going to talk about today. Maybe we'll do it tomorrow about a proposed 20% tax on online gambling. It's probably, I respect the impetus behind it, but you know, it's probably not going to do anything except make things worse. Okay. Any final words from you, John, before we close up for today?
Well, just this sort of tying back to the beginning of our discussion, the little upside and the big upside. You know, if you are a South African, you're watching this, or even if you're not a South African, you're watching this, but you're rooting for South Africa. We want to get the big upside, and that means, you know, getting rid of the race-based laws, protecting property rights, addressing the crime and corruption, and then this place can fly. And I do think that our American friends would love to see us do that.
Yes, and I would love to see that even more than
Yes,
others might love to see
exactly.
that. Okay, thank you very much, everyone. I hope that you had an interesting time listening to us, and we will be back tomorrow with the live show at 1:30-ish tomorrow. I hope that you found the show interesting. We'll see you tomorrow. Cheers, everyone. Bye-bye. The Daily Friend Show and The Daily Friend are a project of the Institute of Race Relations, the IRR. The IRR is a think tank which was founded in 1929 to study race relations in South Africa and works to change government policy to improve race relations through non-racialism and to ensure the prosperity of all South Africans. If you like our work and would like to support us, please go to irr.org.za and click Support the IRR, or you can go to thedailyfriend.co.za and click the Fund Us button.